You're listening to Nightlife with Dom Knight on ABC Radio.
Do you recall back in 2009, and this will probably make it into the history quiz one day if it hasn't already, many people living in New South Wales and Queensland woke up to a street and indeed a sky that was blanketed in a red haze. You might have seen the photos of this even if you didn't live in the affected area. The great dust storm of 2009, later nicknamed the Red Dawn. Now, dust storms happen when strong winds sweep through dry areas and the winds pick up huge plumes of sand and carry them hundreds of and even thousands of kilometres away. But a recent string of more frequent and intense dust storms have been drawing attention from environmentalists, researchers and even the UN. Laura Milan-Lombrana is a news climate reporter for Bloomberg News, and she joins us now from Madrid. Laura, hello.
Hello, good night to everyone.
Great to have you with us here on Nightlife. So where have the most recent storms been taking place and how bad are they exactly?
So the most recent dust storms that we have, that scientists have been able to register and the people have been able to notice have been in the Middle East. So we have seen a particularly intense episode in and around Iran and Iraq, and also the Gulf, the countries of the Arabian Gulf, so the Emirates and Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, etc. So it's been all around that area. And then earlier in the year, we had episodes as well in Spain, where I'm speaking from, and the south of the Mediterranean and also the north of Africa.
Yeah, there's one even called, one of these was even called Godzilla, which is a fairly terrifying name, Laura.
Yes, that one was a couple of years ago, I believe, and it happened, it was actually a massive dust plume, so it was in 2020, and it was an episode where the dust from the Sahara got transported all the way into the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. So it was quite interesting to see that from satellite images. You could literally see the storm through the satellite images, see the dust being transported all across the Atlantic Ocean to Central America. It was quite striking, and they named it Godzilla because it was like really, it was massive. It was bigger than usual.
Yeah, that sounds really quite terrifying. But there are also reports of what's been described as an apocalyptic sandstorm, which is certainly a fairly extreme description, hitting Europe next week. Now, is that overstating it, apocalyptic? Or I suppose it's probably not going to literally be the end of the world.
Yeah, if you take the term literally, apocalyptic refers to the end of the world, right? That's not going to happen, or that's not going to happen because of a dust storm. Mm. But it certainly looks, I mean, you've described the dust storm in New South Wales in 2009, I believe you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I mean, whoever has lived through one, it's quite quite impressive the way the light changes. It usually the sky turns into red, or you know, any sort of tone of orange or brown, depending on how intense it is. It can even shade the sun, and so the certainly the light takes a very strange tone, and one feels a bit like, you know, if you've lived through an eclipse, for example, that's like a similar feeling of like, you know, the whole light changes. And then certainly if you're sort of in the center of the dust storm, or like, you know, you're very close to it, because sometimes it's just like the sun in the atmosphere and you don't really kind of feel it, you know, on the street, let's say. But if you are in the center of the dust storm, or very close to the center of it, then, you know, you can feel really the sand getting everywhere, and, you know, your face, there's wind, etc. So, I mean, it's quite like apocalyptic in a non-literal way. let's put it like that.
Yeah, no, it's I guess the other notion of the apocalypse comes because the sky turns blood red, which is the kind of thing that I imagine the Book of Revelations, it's been a while since I've read it, but the Book of Revelation describes, it's really not ideal when the sky turns the colour of blood, really.
No, it's not. It's not. It doesn't always happen, but it does, and especially at dawn and at dusk. These are like the two moments when the light. I mean, usually already the light and the sky turn a bit like orangey and red, and then you know if there's sand in the sky, then it that accentuates that. So yeah.
Yeah, happening.
It does look scary.
With the fires too, the smoke. So it's, we're getting sadly used to that in Australia. Just to give you a sense of what it was.
I was going to say it's a similar kind of light and atmosphere as when the big fires happen, yes.
There's a text here from Hannah in Sydney who says, I was recovering from surgery in hospital on the day when the sky turned orange-red. The morning shift nurses opened the blind and said, told her about the sky. I wasn't able to go outside, but it felt surreal looking out the window. I can imagine it would have. So these are very upsetting and emotional things when they happen, Laura Milan Lombagna. But in terms of the statistics, how more common, how more frequently do these storms occur in recent years?
That's one of the interesting things about dust storms. So there's a lot that we know about all sorts of atmospheric phenomenon and weather phenomenon, right? We know a lot about the rain. We know a lot about winds, for example. But when it comes to dust, the studying dust storms is not very very old. It's quite recent, actually. So we've only been tracking them for the past 20 years. Scientists do think that there is an increase on the amount of dust storms and on the intensity as well. But because the figures, the numbers and the registries that we have are so young, so in climate and weather terms, just 20 years is really nothing. It's really hard to compare, really hard to figure out the patterns and the trends in just 20 years of data.
Okay.
So we don't really know whether, I mean, scientists think that, yes, there is an increase and there in the intensity and frequency, like I said, but they're not really sure whether, you know, maybe 50 years ago the same thing happened and just like no one took notice and no one just registered that, or if it's an actual trend and you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago or 200 or 500 years ago there weren't as many dust storms as there are being there were the same amount of dust storms and
okay, so we don't have records going back far enough that are accurate enough by the sounds of things. It's Nightlife Around Australia on ABC Radio. My name is Dom Knight, and our guest is Laura Milan Lombagna of Bloomberg News. She's a climate reporter there. And do we have any explanation from scientists, Laura, about why the intensity and frequency seems to be high at the moment anyway, regardless of how that compares to decades past? It's certainly in recent memory is more frequent and intense. Do we have any sense of why? Is it part of the changes to the climate, or is there another thing happening here?
Yeah, again there are no direct explanations. So in recent years, for example, we have seen in the case of heat waves especially, or heavy rains, or you know, the case of the fires in Australia, for example, scientists have been able to determine that climate change was one of the main causes of these phenomenon. So for example, they are able to study the event and to determine that climate change has played a huge role in that. So we don't have that for dust storms, again, because they're still a very unknown phenomenon. But we do know some general things that scientists think are true, and they're certain that this is what's happening. So for example, the fact that desertification is advancing in some of the places where there is a lot of desert already. So I'm talking about the Sahara, which goes all across Africa, the Gobi Desert in China and Mongolia. So these are places with a lot of dust and a lot of sand, and they're growing. So this might be one explanation as of why there seems to be more dust in the atmosphere, and so dust storms are more frequent and intense. This could be one thing. Also, we have had wars and conflicts that have also played a role in desertification. So whenever there is a war, there's a sad case of Ukraine that's going on right now, but it's also happened in Iraq. Whenever there is a war, farmers just stop working and they stop farming the land. And what happens is that the land dries up. And again, that's another source of dust.
Right.
That can be swept by the strong winds. There is mixed evidence about the winds themselves, whether they're being weaker or stronger. And there's like huge debate among scientists about what's happening with that, with atmospheric currents. And so that's a bit harder to explain and to get to. And there's no actual conclusion. But I mean, we do know there is more dust available, more sand in the world. And so that could be one of the reasons why the dust storms are more intense, more frequent.
Interesting. I was going to ask you whether wind had intensified. We know that things like hurricanes are more frequent in places like, the Gulf in the US, the Gulf states. But in any case, let's move on to actually what's going on here, Laura, because the way that dust storms work is quite interesting, and there are sand plumes and atmospheric rivers. What actually are these things? So how does the dust get from the desert to the places where we live?
Right, so you have to think about the desert not just as a layer of sand on top of the earth, but think about it as sand on top of the earth, but also lots of floating sand above the desert. So actually, when you look at satellite images tracking dust, you can see all the time huge sort of clouds of dust above the deserts, the world's main deserts. So I've mentioned the Sahara, I've mentioned the Gobi, but also like Central Australia is another source of dust. It's not as big as the Sahara because Sahara is the world's biggest desert, but anywhere where you have a relatively big dry area, you've got sand or dust floating above it in the atmosphere.
Okay.
So what happens is, at the same time in the atmosphere, there are currents of air, and specifically in the areas close to the equator, there are what we call atmospheric rivers, which are, you can imagine them literally as that, sort of rivers of air that pick up the moisture in the equator and kind of like flow above the earth, kind of like going east to west or west to east, kind of like, you know, horizontally, not vertically.
Okay.
And they travel the world, transporting everything that they pick up wherever they go. So you might remember, for example, in the case of the fires of Australia, the smoke from the fires eventually made it to South America. So that was one of these atmospheric currents that transports everything they find in their travels, in their way.
Okay.
So that's what happens with the plumes. This is what a plume is. The plume is an atmospheric river or an atmospheric current that goes above a desert. Usually it's Sahara. Sometimes it's the Gobi as well, or some part in Central Asia. And they just travel around the world, transporting that dust. So these rivers, usually they follow similar patterns. That's why every year around summer, we can see these plumes traveling east to west from the Sahara to Central America. Like, you know, we mentioned Godzilla before because it was a very unprecedented episode, but there have been, last year there were some episodes, and the year before that, so that's a seasonal thing. There's also currents of air going from North Africa to the north, toward the southern Mediterranean. So that's why we have lots of dust plumes as well arriving to Spain, to south of France, and we have similar trends in Central Asia as well.
I'm just looking at some of the images of the Godzilla dust storm, the dust plume that's absolutely huge by the sounds of things. So Laura, when I've thought about dust storms in the past, I've imagined the wind picking up sand from the ground, as you suggested. Most people think that somehow you just got the wind blowing it into the air and then blowing it over. But you're saying that wherever there's desert, there is dust in the air above it. So that would explain why it's so easy for large quantities of it to blow around. Can we talk about what happens when there's a dust storm? I mean, obviously there's a very big cleanup job to be done, and it's annoying and unpleasant and it's hard to breathe. But does it affect us in more profound ways? Are there health impacts, for instance?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me say first on the cleanup. One of the things that happened this year in Iraq, our colleague in Baghdad was telling me about it, is that Facebook got absolutely flooded with requests of people looking for devices that can clean stuff with pressured water.
Oh, right.
Because that was the only way to clean the sand that had gotten into absolutely every part of every house, of every car. So that was the only way that people had found to clean it. So yes, there is a big cleanup job to do, and actually people, what they wish for after a dust storm is a good rain, because that helps. But yes, no, there are serious things, and that's one of the reasons why scientists and the community really have started to look into it more seriously. Because when the concentration of dust in the air is high enough, so you know you can have these plumes that are kind of like not as dense, and then you know the sky can turn brown for a couple of days, and you know it just makes for interesting pictures on Instagram, and that's it. But then there's the serious episodes where the concentration of dust in the air is really, really high, and that affects everything. So we have seen it in Iraq and Iran this year, where schools had to stop, where workers had to be given days off because going to work was serious, was really hard, because it was hard to go on the streets, because pollution episodes, so in the end, dust in the air is just more particles in the air. So if you're already living in a polluted city, then that means the quality of the air gets worse. So that means everyone suffers, and especially people that are more vulnerable. So that's, you know, children, people with lung diseases, old people. So it's one of the problems. But then even we have seen it in the Canary Islands in Spain, which are parallel, they run parallel to the African coast, and they have had lots of episodes of dust storms. They call it Kalima there.
Yeah.
And in there, we saw the sand getting inside planes' engines. And so the planes wouldn't be able to get off the ground, for example.
That sounds terrible.
So it's got all sorts of implications, yeah.
Indeed. It's nightlife here, and we're talking about dust storms, an increasing global phenomenon, or at least we think that it is, in terms of both frequency and intensity. Our guest is Laura Milan-Lombrana. She's a climate reporter with Bloomberg News. And now Sid's on the line from Broken Hill, and someone in the text line, Daphne, has also mentioned Broken Hill as a place with many dust storms. Hello, Sid.
G'day. We get sort of frequent dust storms with the weather, especially in the summertime with the weather. Comes up with the red dust, red earth, and the property owners and around. And it just comes up as a tsunami of dust, a giant wave. And you put your air conditioner on to pressurize your house to try and keep the dust out.
Boy.
But it is a blink of nuisance, and it gets through everything.
Yeah. Well, Broken Hill, I'm just looking at an aerial picture of Broken Hill, and there's a lot of red soil around Broken Hill there in far western New South Wales. Daphne on the text line suggested that trees were planted to try and combat this. Did it do much? Doesn't sound like it.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
You're mentioning trees. Well, we used to have around Broken Hill lots of trees until the mines became prevalent
because
they chopped all the trees down for the mine, the smelters.
Mm.
So we've got a regeneration area around Broken Hill now, which from 1936, which helps keep the dust down.
Okay, but still a lot gets in by the sounds of things.
It still gets in, yeah.
That sounds rough, Sid.
Thought I'd mention about trees.
Thank you for letting us know, and all the best to people in Broken Hill. That sounds very, very unpleasant. So back to Laura. There you go. We've got people dealing with it on a regular basis here. Just finally, 2 weeks ago, the UN's Economic and Social Commission for Asia and the Pacific met to try and come up with a plan to combat dust storms in Asia. What did they do? What did they come
up
with?
I've actually gone through the document right before we talked, just to refresh it. Actually, it's really interesting that the UN is looking at these things, because it really shows that this is becoming one of the weather and the atmospheric phenomena that one can that people should be paying attention to. What they are doing is putting together a document that that looks at how to react when the storms happen and what countries can do to react properly, basically, when these things happen. Because at the moment, there is a lot of there is no organized response to one of these events. So
right. When
you look, for example, at heavy rains or heat wave, for example, there is coordination among countries. They talk to each other. Governments know that certain event is happening, it's going to take place. They prepare. They know what to do. I mean, especially in places that are hit usually with this phenomenon. I mean, okay. Even in Australia, whenever there are conditions, hot weather and strong wind and so on, people know, oh, there could be a fire. So these are all the things that we must do, as authorities especially.
Yeah.
There is not such a thing called dust storms.
So we're in the starts of, in the beginning of trying to come up with a response, yes, I guess, by the sounds of things.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll watch this space. Thank you for explaining this very complicated phenomenon to us, Laura, so clearly. And climate reporter at Bloomberg News.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.